sister and I had a wonderful time playing with our toys I bought him. And then, after 12, my dad arrived. And we thought, wow, this is pretty good. You know, divorce is not such a bad thing. You get two Christmases.
And all my mom heard was the word snake. She took off outside the house and she was like screaming, just panicked.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hankin.
And I am Laura Wexler. And this week, the second in our installment of Holiday Stoop Stories, we are featuring two tales of holiday lies. Because what would the holidays be without the lies we tell to keep spirit alive, keep fiction alive, and to
keep commerce
not
alive.
Telling everyone that how we really feel about them.
Yeah, no, we can't say that. No, that would ruin everything. Before we get started, we want to thank the Park School of Baltimore, which is an independent, co-educational, progressive pre-K through grade 12 school located just outside of Baltimore City on a 100-acre campus.
So this first story is from a writer and an illustrator and a wonderful guy here in Baltimore named Jonathan Scott Fuqua. And it's a story about being a kid at Christmas.
A porky kid, and, as he calls himself.
One particularly memorable and confusing holiday.
My parents got divorced in the spring of my third grade year of school. And throughout that summer and into the fall, they actually dated, which was incredibly strange. That Christmas was our first Christmas as a broken family. Now, you would think that would be a terrible thing, but in fact, it was great. My mother was incredibly concerned that we were, you know, thinking that possibly the divorce was our fault. And so what she wanted to do was give us everything she could for Christmas. Now back then we didn't get a whole lot, but I did have two things I wanted more than anything else. The first one was the Bruce Jenner workout uniform, the shirt, the jogging suit. And I was incredibly excited about it, which is funny because since the divorce I had actually gained a little weight. I'd gotten a little porky, but I still imagined if I wore this suit, I would look much more sportif. And hence, not look quite as important. The other thing that I wanted, and I really wanted it more than the Bruce Jenner suit, was Mike Power. And Mike Power was G.I. Joe's version of the Bionic Man. And he was incredible. First of all, he was unbelievably skinny. I have seen him recently, and he looked so light on his feet, it's terrible. But at the time, he seemed like everything to me. And when I looked at Mike Power had this awesome bionic leg and one bionic arm. And then what looked like a sniper hole in the back of his head was in fact this eyepiece that you could look through. And it looked like frosted glass. And you can imagine if you actually could see through that eyepiece, it would be incredibly fun. So these are the things that I wanted for Christmas. And I got them both. And I remember sitting there Christmas morning with Mike Power, and I realized Mike Power also had a little cog in his arm. It was right here. And when you turn the cog, his hand spun. And what he also came was this kind of rotor blade, like a helicopter blade. And you could put it in his hand and spin his arm, and it looked like he could possibly fly away to any place he wanted to go. Mike was like a self-propelled unit. And I was incredibly jealous of Mike. And I loved Mike, too. And the morning went by, and it was a great morning because I didn't have to sit there with my father, who actually hated Christmas, and tell him how much I liked everything he gave me, because he always liked to hear that. Yes, Dad, I love it. I love it, Dad. Yes, it's great, Dad. I've never gotten one better, Dad. It's great. I didn't have to say any of that. It was fantastic. My brother, sister, and I had a wonderful time playing with our toys I bought him. And then, after 12, my dad arrived. And we thought, wow, this is pretty good. You know, divorce is not such a bad thing. You get two Christmases. This is going to be fantastic. And we were very excited. And I ran out in my Bruce Jenner suit. And I held Mike Power under my arm. And my brother, being smarter than I did, hopped in the backseat. My sister, not really sure what to do, hopped in the backseat after him. And I got in the seat next to my dad. And my dad looked over at me. And my dad had a really funny way of speaking, and he still does. He said, "Is that what your mother gave you?" I said, "This? Mike Power?" He said, "Yeah. Is that what your mother gave you?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, is gonna look really stupid later. And I said, oh, okay, well, that's cool. I know what he was trying to do. He was trying to make my mom look bad by telling me it would look stupid. But at the same time, I was thinking, if you can give me something better than Mike Power, then you are giving me something great. And I am looking forward to it. So we started up the car, and I was incredibly excited. We go down the street, we get out of the neighborhood, either turn left or turn right. Well, normally, if you go left, you go to my dad's apartment. It was a depressing little place, except for the dead presents. The thing is, we went right. And at first, I was very concerned. And I know my sister and my brother were as well, because right could lead to my grandmother's house. My grandmother was a very unique woman. First of all, she liked to make you feel guilty. And second of all, she wore these dresses with the design or a pattern of chains and locks. And it was slightly sadomasochistic. I don't know. But she was not that way, and I don't think she realized it. But she was a little scary because of that. Well, luckily, we actually didn't go to my grandmother's house. We turned about 2 miles down the road and went into this place called King's Mill. And we were incredibly excited. We drive down the street. King's Mill is beautiful, you know? We turn into this other place called Winston Flats. And there are these big, big homes. It's nice, nice places. Townhouses that, you know, are perfectly modern, just been built. And we stop. My brother, sister, and I are incredibly confused. What are we doing here? Who is having my father, who hates Christmas, for Christmas? We kind of look around. We look to my dad. My dad's kind of being coy. My dad says, let's get out of the car. So we get out of the car, and I'm holding Mike Power close to me, thinking, I don't want whoever it is to grab my Mike Power. So we walk around back, and my dad grabs a few presents and everything, and we're standing there, and he goes and knocks on our door. And we're wondering, all of us, what are we doing here? What's going on here? Who's going to answer the door? This is incredibly weird. Why would Dad do this to us? Who is at the door? And the door opens. And, I mean, there was this moment of shock, and everything seemed surreal, because it was actually our friend's mother, Mrs. Hoagland. And we kind of looked at her like, what the hell are you doing here? And she looked at us like, I wish you weren't here. And then she said, come on in, kids. So we walked inside, and we were in this ultra-modern hallway with white carpeting, Scandinavian furniture everywhere. My dad was there kind of looking smug. And way in the back, you could see what was supposed to be a Christmas tree, but in fact was not. It was not even close to a Christmas tree. It was a thorn bush, spray-painted white, and stuck all over with gumballs. You guys remember those from the 70s? It was unbelievably stupid-looking. And we stand there, and I can't help but look at Mrs. Hoagland and go, Mrs. Hoagland, where are Lee and Gray? Lee and Gray, of course, being our friends and her kids. And she says, they're not here. And I said, oh. And my brother said, Mrs. Hoagland? Where's Mr. Hoagland? And Mrs. Hoagland kind of sidled up to my dad. My dad looked at us and said, we're in love, kids. We are in love, and we've been in love for a long time. And we kind of stood there thinking, what the hell is happening here? And with Mrs. Hoagland? And he said, don't call her Mrs. Hoagland anymore. Call her Elaine. I said, oh, okay, Dad. And my brother said, well, where is Mr. Hoagland? And my dad said, Mr. Hoagland's kind of an asshole. He didn't love Elaine enough, so now Elaine loves me. Oh, okay, that's cool. And then Elaine said, let's go eat some dinner. So we go over and sit down and eat dinner. And it's all still kind of surreal, you know? And we're eating dinner, and Elaine reaches over and touches my hand. And she says, Scotty, maybe you don't want that extra serving. You're looking a little heavy in that running suit. And I was thinking, I just want to rip this Bruce Jenner suit off! Shut up, Elaine! I looked at Mike Power, and I was beginning to kind of shiver. When we were done with dinner, we walk over to the thorn bush. My dad grabs his big box and throws it to my sister. My sister looks at him, and he says, "Open it." So Katie opens it up, and it's Rub-A-Dub-A-Dolly. And Rub-A-Dub-A-Dolly is cool because Rub-A-Dub-A-Dolly is supposed to be like a little battleship and float in the tub. Except what we found out later is this specific Rub-A-Dub-A-Dolly had a flaw in the finger and sunk. Which is just like that Christmas. And my dad felt very smug and happy that he had given my sister Rub-A-Dub-A-Dolly, which was clearly better than anything my mom could have provided. So then he threw us, my brother and I, these kind of oblong packages. We looked at them, we had no idea what they were, and he said, "Open them." So we opened those, and they were sleeping bags made out of that kind of bandana fabric. They looked kind of cheap, and he said, "They'll take you to Five Below." And my brother and I looked at each other, it's like, yeah, they'll take us to 60. But we didn't say that. And then my dad gave us two more packages. My brother and I opened them up. And they were these kind of walkie-talkie CB radio things. My dad said, "Sometimes at night if you listen, you can hear truckers." And I kind of wondered why I wanted to hear a trucker. I had no idea why I would, but you know, possibly you could on these walkie-talkie CB radios. And my brother was kind of just mad. He was not happy with the day. And he just kind of sat on the couch. He wasn't going to do anything. He wasn't going to get up or look at my dad or anything. So my dad snatched his walkie-talkie CB radio and looked at me and he said, "Sky, go on out there about 300 yards. Go on over to, you know, the golf course area. And I'm going to give you a call." And I said, okay. So I carried Mike Powell. And I walked out there in my Bruce Jenner uniform that made me look fat. And I got over to the golf course and I turned around and I could just see my dad. And my dad lifted his walkie-talkie to his mouth and he said, Bonzo, this is Firefox. You there?" And I said, "Yeah, Dad, I'm here." He said, "Aren't these great? Yeah, Dad, they're great. Aren't these great? They're great. Yeah, I know they're great." And I was watching him as he was saying this, and Elaine, or Mrs. Hoagland, whatever the hell her name was, came out and wrapped her arm around my dad. I could see it from a distance, kind of snuggled up against him. And I felt like, I don't know, I was incredibly violent feeling at that moment. And I wanted to take that stupid damn CB radio thing and throw it on the ground and smash it. Then I wanted to burn that cheap bandana bag. But I was sitting there so frustrated, I was holding Mike Power, which is really the only good thing in my life at that moment. And I looked at Mike, kind of teary feeling, and Mike looked back at me with that sniper hole in his head and everything. And I thought, God, Mike's so lucky. He can lift his hand and fly away. That's all he has to do. And I thought, if I could just do that, if I could just lift my hand and have a rotor blade in it, I could fly out of this place. I could leave this sorry ass Christmas behind. Because my dad had taken what had been a great Christmas and ruined it. Introducing us to Mrs. Hoagland, and she wasn't Mrs. Hoagland anymore, she was Elaine. And I was sitting there fuming and imagining myself, you know, 100 miles above the ground, just driving myself away to some deserted island somewhere where I could just sit with my power and enjoy myself, maybe lose a few pounds and look good in my jogging outfit. And then I hear, Bonzo, you still there?" "Yes, Dad." "You like that sleeping bag too? It's a nice one, isn't it?" "Yes, Dad." "It's really nice, isn't it?" "Yes, Dad. It's really great bag, huh?" "Dad, my walkie-talkie isn't working really well." "See ya." I turned it off. And that was how our first Christmas as a broken family went. Merry Christmas.
Oh, I love so much about that story. The image of him in his Bruce Jenner tracksuit and how everyone keeps on telling him that he's Porky, even though he really thinks that he looks, as he said, sportif. Oh, God, it's such a sad, funny story. And I do remember very vividly, this was 10 years ago, easily. It was at Creative Alliance when we first got started, just how the audience, just tears of laughter was rolling down everyone's faces. It was he did such a great job with that.
Yeah, what I do love about the holiday stories we have on the Stoop is that so many of them have this like snow globe quality, like they're trapped in this under glass or something. And even when they're not like the perfect, you know, everything was perfect, Santa, snow falling, all that stuff, they still have this, I don't know, it's like this glow about them or sheen about them.
They're precious, precious memories, yeah.
Before we get on to our next story for the episode, our next tale of lies, we want to thank Golden West, which is a vegetarian restaurant, Southwestern on the Avenue in Hamden. They do late night dining. They have a great bar. They have all sorts of cool events. So check out Golden West. And we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. Their podcast, Local Flavor Live, captures all the cool happenings on the food scene. And at BaltimoreMagazine.com, you can find out about all sorts of holiday happenings and otherwise.
So this next storyteller is an architect. He hails originally from Nigeria. His name is Mide Akinsade. He's been on the Stoop stage twice. And this is a story about he very much lied. He just lied on Christmas. Take a listen.
So this story actually involved a set of gifts that we got for Christmas, that my family got for Christmas. And one of them was old, which was almost like a family heirloom. And the other one was something brand new. Somebody had visited my parents and bought a brand new boombox for the family. And if you can recall, you know, you have this boombox that has like, you know, has these microphones and you can like, you know, sing karaoke. So it was like a big hit in the family. But we had gotten it for the holidays. So, you know, I spent hours on it. And the second gift was this awesome dish, this embroidered dish that my grandmother had, and it's been in the family forever. She, you know, there's like this whole story about the dish, about how she got it. She was like fighting with her sister over it, and she inherited it. But every holiday season, she'll come to the house and just bring her most favorite food in this dish. And of course, at the end of, you know, when everything's done, we have to like clean it and wrap it nicely, and she takes it back. But my mother wanted it, and my mom has two sisters. So there was no way she was going to get it because she wasn't the eldest. But, you know, whenever my grandmother comes, she brings a dish. So that particular Christmas, the Christmas that we got the boombox, my grandmother came as usual, brought the dish. And, you know, we had dinner, and she started to leave. You know, she was walking out the house, but she didn't take the dish with her. And my mother kind of winked at us, and she was like, oh, this is a chance to get it, you know, grandma. Grandma forgot the dish, you know, just don't say anything. So my grandmother left, and we all went to bed. It was like piles of dishes in the kitchen. And the house that I grew up in Nigeria, it was a house that my dad built, which were four apartments. We lived in one unit. His brother and his family lived in the other unit. And actually, the upper units weren't completed when we moved in. So so normally, it's the kids' chores to do the dishes, like the day after, and it was my turn to do the dishes, and my parents went out for the day, and of course I had all the dishes in the sink, and nobody was home. I was just like, oh, the boombox. You know, I could like listen to the music while I'm washing dishes. I went out to the well in the back and drew water, brought it to the kitchen, and the sink is right next to the window. I had everything set up. I had the boombox, brought it into the kitchen with an extension cord, set it on a chair right by the door, and somehow I was like trying to sing and do dishes at the same time, which was, you know, as a 12-year-old, it was preposterous. But I was, like, doing the dishes and somehow tucked too hard on the microphone, and the boombox fell and smashed on the floor. And in the panic, while it smashed, I hit the shelf, the sink, and the dish fell on the other side and smashed. And I grew up in a Catholic family where you don't spare the rod. Like, we don't get, and it's pretty typical growing up in West Africa where your parents just, when you get in trouble, your parents give you, they don't give you a whipping, they give you a flogging. So, and I was like, okay, my dad is going to kill me because he loves this boombox, and my mom is definitely going to kill me because of this dish. And of course, I started crying, and, I was like packing up the broken dishes and moved the boombox. And all of a sudden, I heard the car in the driveway, and I was like, okay, this is it. This is how I die. And I started crying and went to the front door, and my father was walking, and my mother was behind her. And my dad was like, what's going on? Why are you crying? And I was like, I think I saw a snake, like, near the front door, and I think I broke the dish in a panic, and the boombox fell over, and blah, blah, blah. And my mom was walking up behind him, and all my mom heard was the word snake. She took off outside the house, and she was, like, screaming, just panicked. There's a snake in the house. We got to kill it, and blah, blah, blah. And the neighbors came out because they heard the scream. And I'm kind of going, oh, crap. I just lied, and it just ballooned into something else. So the neighbors came out, and they were like, oh, what's going on? And a little aside to the story, like, next door, my uncle, he had a one-year-old that died, probably two months prior. So, of course, the neighbors heard the scream. They thought something happened, and they all came. And they were like, what's going on? My dad was like, oh, we think he saw a snake. And my mom is, like, outside in the street, just, like, frantic. And I think my dad was embarrassed because he was just, like, his, like, 12-year-old, like, crying, because he saw a snake. And his wife is over there. And the neighbors were there. And he kind of was like, and all the neighbors, all the men were like, oh, we're going to get in the house again. He's like, no, everybody go back outside the gate. We're going to find a snake. I'm going to make him a tough boy, blah, blah. And I couldn't tell him that it was a lie. And all of a sudden, my mom rode by in a taxi, and she's like, I'm going to be at my grandmother. Am I going to be at my mother's house? And she takes off and, like, leaves for, like, the day. And remember, this is in Africa in December. It's pretty hot. My dad takes off his shirt and, like, he goes, okay, we're going to go in the house and find a snake. So we literally had to take every piece of furniture one by one, go outside, and he's in the room, like, looking, and I'm just crying my eyes out. Like, I can't tell him now. This lie has gone on too long. We went in, like, emptied the house. Of course, there was no snake. Had to put all the furniture back in. Well, mind you, my mother didn't come back home. She was just like, she didn't believe my dad when, he said he found, there was no snake or whatnot. And she didn't come back till, like, New Year's Eve. And she didn't come back voluntarily. My grandmother had to bring her back. Everything was fine. So as soon as my grandmother walks in with my mom, my grandmother pulled me aside, and she was, and my grandmother is the flogger. Like, when I talk about punishment, you don't want to cross grandma. And she kind of pulled me aside, and she was like, son, let me talk to you. And she pulled me over to a corner, and I was like, okay, she's seen through my lies. She knows. And she goes, you didn't really see a snake, did you? Like, come on, settle with grandma. And of course, I started crying again. And she was like, she pulled me close, and she, like, held me, and she was like, it's okay. She's like, when a kid dies, my cousin next door, which was, like, 2 months earlier, she's like, kids see things. Like, maybe that's what happened. You were, like, kind of stressed, and you thought you saw a snake, right? And I was like, yeah. And she, like, reached in her bag and brought out a bag of candy and gave it to me. Of course, I was, like, racked with guilt. I was like, oh, crap. Like, she thought, she went along with the lie, and I couldn't tell her because I know she'll kill me. But so I didn't tell anything, and I think as I remember that night, we're sitting in the living room watching the Christmas, the New Year celebration, the New Year's Eve. Me sitting wedged between my mother. My mother was, like, holding me tight against her bosom, and I've got a lollipop in my mouth. And my grandmother is sitting there, and my dad is sitting over there, and we all had our feet on the coffee table because my mom still thought there was a snake in the house. And I'm yet to tell her and my dad the story, but I think one day after all this therapeutic session, I'll be able to tell. But that was, like, how I ruined Christmas for my family. So.
Yeah, I well remember having the experience as a kid, or more as a teenager, of telling one lie and then getting into a situation you have to tell more and more and more to support that lie. Yeah. And that is the most stressful.
The cover-up is worse than the crime.
Yeah. And ooh, I like that.
Yeah, well,
you did know. You say that? Or is that original?
No, I think it's from Watergate.
Oh, is it? Oh, yes.
I think it's pretty famous.
Wow, I wonder what will be the quotable lines from what's going on now.
Oh, but anyway. It's just WTF are the quotable lines. Yeah.
So, two holiday lie stories for you, one where a child is a victim of the lies and one where the child is the perpetrator. If you are enjoying these holiday tales, please come out to our live holiday hootenanny on Thursday, December 12th at the Senator Theater.
We're going to be recording it as an entire podcast episode.
That's
actually.
Right. Yeah. So, and you can find out more about that at stoopstorytelling.com. You can also find out about our podcast there and all our other happenings. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the show.
Yes.
And we will see you next week with another holiday installment of Stories from the Stoop.
Take care. Make us a noise.